60. It was hot. Moist, itchy, hot. Even in the shade beneath the festooned camouflage nets, the decks of Blucher were smothered with hot, sticky waves of swamp air. The sweat that oozed and trickled down the glistening bodies of the half-naked men who slaved on her foredeck gave them no relief, for the air was too humid to evaporate the moisture. They moved like sleepwalkers, with slow mechanical determination, manhandling the thick sheet of steel plate into its slings beneath the high arm of the crane. Even the flow of obscenity from the lips of Lockcramper, the engineering commander, had dried up like a spring in drought season. He worked with his men, like them, stripped to the waist, and the tattoos on his upper arms and across his chest heaved and bulged as they rode on an undulating sea of muscles. "Rest," he grunted, and they straightened up from their labours, mouths gasping as they sucked in the stale air, massaging aching backs, glowering at the sheet of steel with true hatred. "Capitan!" Lockcramper became aware of von Kleiner for the first time. He stood against the forward gun turret, tall in full whites, the blonde beard half-concealing the cross of black enamel and silver that hung at his throat. Lockcramper crossed to him. "It goes well?" von Kleiner asked, and the engineer shook his head. "Not as well as I had hoped." He wiped one huge hand across his forehead, leaving a smudge of grease and rust scale on his own face. "Slow," he said. "Too slow."
"You have encountered difficulties?"
"Everywhere," growled the engineer. And he looked around at the heat mist and the mangroves and the sluggish black waters and the mud banks. "Nothing works here. The welding equipment, the winch engines, even the men. Everything sickens in this obscene heat."
"How much longer?"
"I do not know, Capitan. I truly do not know."
Von Kleiner would not press him. If any man could get Blucher seaworthy, it would be this man. When Lockcramper slept at all, it was here on the foredeck, curled like a dog on a mattress thrown on the planking. He slept a few exhausted hours amid the whine and groan of the winches, the blue hissing glare of the welding torches, and the drum-splitting hammering of the riveters, and then he was up again, bullying, leading, coaxing and threatening.
"Another 3 weeks," Lockcramper estimated reluctantly. "A month at the most, if all goes as it does now."
They were both silent, standing together, two men from different worlds, drawn together by a common goal, united by respect for each other's ability. A mile up the channel, movement caught their attention. It was one of the launchers returning to the cruiser, yet it looked like a hayrick under its bulky cargo. It came slowly against the sluggish current, sitting so low in the water that only a few inches of freeboard showed, while its load was a great shaggy hump, on which sat a dozen black men. Von Kleiner and Lockcramper watched it approaching.
"I still do not know about that obscene wood, Capitan."
Lockcramper shook his big head untidily again.
"It is so soft, so much ash it could clog the furnace."
"There is nothing else we can do," von Kleiner reminded him. When Blucher entered the Refugee, her coal bunkers were almost empty. There was enough fuel for perhaps 4,000 miles of steaming. Hardly enough to carry her in a straight run down into latitude 45 degrees south, where her mothership Esther waited to refuel her and fill her magazines with shell. There was not the faintest chance of obtaining coal. Instead, von Kleiner had set Commissioner Fleischer and his 1,000 native porters to cutting cordwood from the forests that grew at the apex of the delta. It was a duty that Commissioner Fleischer had opposed with every argument and excuse he could muster. He felt that in delivering safety to Captain von Kleiner the steel plating from Dar es Salaam, he had discharged any obligation that he might have towards the Blucher. His eloquence availed him not at all. Lockkamper had fashioned 200 primitive axe heads from the steel plate, and von Kleiner had sent Lieutenant Killer upriver with Fleischer to help him keep his enthusiasm for woodcutting burning brightly. For 3 weeks now, the Blücher's launches had been plying steadily back and forth. Up to the present, they had delivered some 500 tons of timber. The problem was finding storage for this unwieldy cargo once the coal bunkers were filled. "We will have to begin deck-loading the cordwood soon," von Kleiner muttered, and Lockkamper opened his mouth to reply, when the alarm bells began to clamour an emergency and the loud hailer boomed. "Kapitän to the bridge! Kapitän to the bridge!" Von Kleiner turned and ran. On the companion ladder, he collided with one of his lieutenants. They caught at each other for balance, and the lieutenant shouted into von Kleiner's face, "Kapitän! An aircraft! Flying low! Coming this way! Portuguese markings!" "Damn it to hell!" Von Kleiner pushed past him and bounded up the ladder. He burst onto the bridge, panting. "Fair is it?" he shouted. The officer of the watch dropped his binoculars and turned to von Kleiner with relief. "There it is, sir." He pointed through a hole in the tangled screen of camouflage that hung like a veranda roof over the bridge. Von Kleiner snatched the binoculars from him, and, as he trained them on the distant winged shape in the mist haze above the mangroves, he issued his orders. "Warn the men ashore. Everybody under cover," he barked. "All guns trained to maximum elevation. Pom-poms loaded with shrapnel. Machine gun crews closed up. But no firing until my orders." He held the aircraft in the round field of the field glasses. "Portuguese, all right," he grunted. The green and red insignia showed clearly against the brown body of the aircraft. "She's searching." The aircraft was sweeping back and forth, banking over and turning back at the end of each leg of her search pattern, like a farmer ploughing a field. Von Kleiner could make out the head and shoulders of a man crouched forward in the squat, round nose of the aircraft. "Now we'll find out how effective is our camouflage." So the enemy have guessed at last. They must have reported the convoy of steel plate, or perhaps the chopping of the cordwood has alerted them, he thought, watching the aircraft tacking slowly towards him. We could not hope to go undetected forever, but I did not expect them to send an aircraft. And then suddenly, the thought struck him so hard that he gasped with the danger of it. He whirled and ran to the forward rail of the bridge and peered out through the camouflage net. Still half a mile distant, trundling slowly down the centre of the channel, with the wide rippling V of her wake spread on the current before her, clumsy as a pregnant hippo with her load of cordwood, the launch was aimed straight at Blücher. From the air, she would be as conspicuous as a fat tick on a white sheet. "The launch!" shouted von Kleiner. "Hail her! Order her to run for the bank! Get her under cover!" But he knew it was useless. By the time she was within hail, it would be too late. He thought of ordering his forward turrets to fire on the launch and sink her, but discarded the idea immediately. The fall of the shell would immediately draw the enemy's attention. Impatiently, he stood gripping the rail of the bridge and mouthing his anger and his frustration at the approaching launch.